Support for WPR comes from Present Music, performing honest music with guest violist and curator Nadia Sirota, May 9th at 8 at the Milwaukee Art Museum. Tickets and info are at presentmusic.org.
Let us go then, you and I, when the evening is spread out against the sky, like a patient etherized upon a table. Let us go through certain half-deserted streets, the muttering retreats of restless nights in one-night cheap hotels and sawdust restaurants with oyster shells, streets that follow like a tedious argument of insidious intent to lead you to an overwhelming question. Oh, do not ask, what is it? Let us go and make our visit. T.S. Eliot's The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock was first published by Poetry Magazine in 1915. The magazine's early editions also included new poems and essays from Ezra Pound, William Carlos Williams, and Marianne Moore. Today, the magazine still maintains its open-door policy, considering submissions regardless of poetic genre. It's also a home to poetry criticism. Christian Wyman has been the magazine's editor for nearly 10 years. Steve Paulson talked with him.
How would you describe the role of Poetry Magazine, both for the poetry community and for the culture at large?
You know, that's changed over the years because when poetry was founded, it had a tiny little audience, probably about 500 people, but kind of outsized significance. Because in some of its first issues appeared Ezra Pound and T.S. Eliot and D.H. Lawrence and even people like Ernest Hemingway and Samuel Beckett. And so it sort of ramified around the world from that little cell in Chicago. Over the years, we've grown, and our circulation now is up to 30,000, and we reach probably a million through the Poetry Foundation website every month. But in a way, our role has never changed. It's still the discovery of new poets, and our role is to get their work as broadly exposed as possible. But it's still the same. It's poem by poem, it's poet by poet, and you know, the greatest excitement for us is when we come across somebody that's some voice that's just completely new.
Does that happen very often?
Well, no, that's why it's so exciting. I mean, it's quite rare, actually, when some voice really leaps out at you and you recognize something new. I remember sitting in my office when I first took this job and reading poems by someone named Atsuro Riley. He turned out to be of Japanese descent, raised in the Deep South. He has since published a single book of poems, but the voice was so inimitable and so clearly new, and it just leapt out at me, and I took everything he sent and everything he sent subsequently. And it's happened, you know, several times over the years that there have been people like that where you realize that something is really sparking fresh. It's really new, and those are definitely the most exciting times for Don Scher and I. He's the senior editor at Poetry, and he and I discuss everything as we're going through the process.
So it sounds like what you love the most is a singular voice, a poet who doesn't sound like anyone else.
I think so. I think, you know, you can make too much of originality. I think it's possible to accomplish great and durable things in conventional voices. So it's not necessarily a style or a voice that's so exciting. That is sort of an obvious excitement, but it's some sort of emotional or intellectual freshness that comes to you, and it can come to you in different ways.
Hmm. Now, I think a lot of people see a fundamental tension in sort of two poles of poetry. On one side, they're very accessible poems that that pretty much everyone can get, but perhaps not too sophisticated. And on the other side, the incredibly complex, difficult poems that perhaps only other poets really appreciate. Do you see that as the fundamental tension in the world of poetry?
I guess I have different answers to it. In a way, yes, that pole does exist. Some kinds of poetry are quite difficult, and I think you would need to be a specialist to read them. There's no doubt. And then there's this whole other kind that's quite accessible, like Billy Collins. But the bandwidth in between those poles is so wide. There's all kinds of things in there. For instance, Robert Frost, I would put somewhere directly in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
He's someone who's, I think, accessible to a lot of people, but then there's all kinds of complexity within that clarity. So the more you look, the more you find in those poems.
So which way does your own aesthetic tilt?
I do lean toward poems that are accessible to general readers. I want people who are not specialists in poetry to be able to read Poetry Magazine. If we have something in there that I think is particularly difficult or innovative, we will often try to find some way of giving people an entrance into it. So sometimes we do a Q&A with the author afterwards or something like that.
Mm-hmm. How many new poems would you say you read every week? Poems that come into your magazine?
More than you would want to read, let me tell you.
Well, I've heard that there's something like 90,000 poems that are submitted to Poetry Magazine every year. Is that
more,
right?
More. It's gone up. Yeah, it's gone up. Now that we're taking online submissions, you know, we get them from all around the world, and we think it's up to about 110. We haven't done an official count, it's about 110,000.
Wow. Do you ever get into arguments about whether a poem is good or not?
We definitely disagree, but I wouldn't say they're arguments.
Fierce disagreements or gentle disagreements?
They're gentle disagreements.
Well, I guess it raises the question of whether poetry is a genteel world or whether it can actually get kind of rough and tumble.
Oh, my God. You know, I mean, Robert Frost once said in answer to that question, you know, if poetry was a means of relaxation or something, he said poetry is a means of taking life by the throat. A life in poetry is a very difficult thing. Very difficult, not only because the technique is so difficult, so arduous to master and requires so many years, but because there's no reward for so long, and maybe never. And that's why I see part of our role at the magazine is reaching into the lives of poets out there who are experiencing that kind of loneliness that I know about, and bolstering them a bit as best we can.
Well, your magazine has quite a history. Yeah, I wonder, are you ever haunted by the ghosts of Ezra Pound and Marianne Moore and William Carlos Williams or the magazine's founder, Harriet Monroe, who published all those great early modernist poets, or even Ruth Lilly, who gave your foundation $200 million 10 years ago? Do you feel pressure to live up to the history of Poetry Magazine?
I do. When I first took on the magazine, I didn't. Maybe it was brash or something, but I didn't feel a history as much as I do now. And it may be that Don and I have just put together this centennial anthology, which is coming out in October. It's called The Open Door, 100 Poems and 100 Years of Poetry Magazine. And so we read through the entire archives, some 30,000, 40,000 poems. That was a daunting and sobering and chastening task because you do see these masterpieces jut out of the magazine, but you also see that most of what is there is it gets lost.
But if you've been looking back over 100 years of just what's been published in Poetry Magazine, you must have a very keen sense of the modern history of poetry and a sense of which are the good periods and which are the not so good periods. Which are we in now? Is this a good time for poetry?
I think it is, but it's much more difficult to judge poetry and literature in general than it is now because it's just so much bigger. You know, I got a letter recently from Donald Hall, a well-known poet, been the poet laureate. And when he came up, you know, you might publish a book and you might sell 750 copies, but it would be reviewed in the New Yorker and the New Republic and the New York Times and all these places. And now you might actually sell a lot more copies, but a book will seem to sink like a stone.
So the place of poetry in our culture is much less than it once was.
Well, I don't know that that's true. I think actually in terms of scope, it's probably much more. The literary world used to be much more concentrated. It had this intense influence, but it didn't reach into all kinds of communities that now it does, that are now asserting their voices. The literary world is simply an incoherent place now. And that's a good thing, I think, not a bad thing. I think it's good. The tumult of it is a very good thing.
We've been talking about the art of poetry. Your magazine also publishes a lot of criticism, and you yourself are a critic as well as a poet. What's the role of criticism in the poetry community?
Oh, it's twofold. When I took over, I really wanted to shake up the world of criticism and brought in all these young critics and just gave them free rein. And it caused enormous controversy because some very famous poets took hard beatings in the pages of poetry. And in the poetry culture at large, I think it's necessary to have that kind of friction between the young and the old. It's always been the way it is. It's shaking out the good from the bad. The other is drawing attention to what might otherwise get passed over. And that's probably ultimately much more important. And I do think that, as always, many of the best poets writing are the least known. I tend to think that things would get lost if you didn't have someone telling you how to read it, someone paying some kind of early attention to it. It may be that we would have come to T.S. Eliot eventually. The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock was T.S. Eliot's first publication, and it appeared in Poetry Magazine. And Ezra Pound had to convince Harriet Monroe to publish it. And in fact, the readers hated it. So that's an example of criticism, I think, being the prow that breaks the ice.
Do you ever get tired of reading poetry?
Oh, you bet. No, you bet. I get sick to death of it. Yeah.
Well, you often hear, for instance, movie reviewers are, you know, having to watch a dozen movies every week. You know, that's the last thing in the world they want to do, especially when so much of it is tripe.
Right. Yeah, no, there's no question. I get sick of it. And, I mean, how could you not? Some of the best readers of poetry I've ever known were people who hated poetry. They were so sick of it, they couldn't, they were just had become all beak and talon when they were coming at it. But we talk about this all the time. We talk about how you fight off fatigue and how you do remain open to the new thing when it's there. I mean, if you're in that state of hating poetry, I mean, you're going to miss it.
So if you're looking for inspiration, are there certain poets you turn to? Do you have particular touchstones?
Well, the 16th century poet George Herbert is so close to my heart. He had this tension between ambition and a calling from God, and he became a priest, and he wrote some of the most beautiful poems in the language, clear, heart-piercing poems. Eliot, whom I've already mentioned a couple of times, is another one. There are many, though.
I think I may have finally figured out what you look for in poetry. It's the priestly function. It's the poet who is dipping her quill into the sacred waters.
Well, it's interesting. I am most compelled by poetry that seeks transcendence, or at least believes in transcendence in some way. At the same time, I think that can get very fuzzy and frustrating. Often what we think of as being transcendent is actually the most specific thing that can be rendered. You know, when Pound wrote that great little couplet that appeared in poetry early on in the first year, 1912, is the apparition of these faces in the crowd, petals on a wet, black bough. That's it. That's the whole poem in a station of the metro. And he sort of changed the whole language right then. And that's a poem that seems to me at once utterly transcendent, because it makes you see this scene in a completely different way and yet utterly specific. It renders that world to a pointless degree, to a precision that you wouldn't have thought possible. And so when I say that I love poems that have some degree of transcendence, I tend to think of it actually as inhering in that kind of specificity that you get in a poem like that in a station at the metro.
Christian Wyman is a poet, essayist, and editor of Poetry Magazine. Steve Paulson talked with him. You can hear Wyman reading his own work by going to our website, ttbook.org. I'm Jim Fleming. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International.